I'm Chuck Spee, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi. Tomorrow, if it comes, Mrs. Spee and I are having a little Thanksgiving dinner. And we're having our children, grandchildren, and two wives of one of our sons. Now, if neither of us show up next week, you'll know that we made a mistake. November, as most of us know, is Gratitude Month in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's particularly nice for me to be able to talk tonight on Thanksgiving Eve. Because I've had 30 years and almost 10 months that I haven't had to take a drink or a sedating or tranquilizing pill. And in 30 years, you certainly have lots of things to be grateful for, particularly for the 30 years. Because had it not been for people like you, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and the God of Alcoholics Anonymous, who's very personal, I wouldn't be here. I would have left these parts 30 years ago. So it's quite nice to have 30 years and 10 months, roughly, that you wouldn't have had otherwise. And I know it clear through, so I'm most grateful for it. I'm so grateful for you all right here. We've been here now in this area almost 20 years. We came down the 14th of February, which will be 20 years this February. And we've been here every night that we haven't been engaged someplace else, that is, every Wednesday night. And we're so, so much in love with all of you that there's no words to tell you. You're the greatest bunch of people I ever saw. I'm most happy that we have a dozen or so new people here tonight, because I had decided that I was going to talk to the new people if they were here, because that wasn't what I wanted to do. Being that this is my home group, what I should love to do better than anything in the world is to lay a heavy, profound message on you. But I think that probably the one you're going to get might be much more profound than the one I'd give you, because it'll be pretty much out of the book. I used to think, for many, many years, for well over half my life, I thought that when I knew enough, everything was going to be all right. But that's not it. It's when we do enough, everything is all right. It's not knowing at all, it's doing. The only way that anybody will ever know that the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous works is to work them and see. It's the only way we'll ever know. I doubt very much if there's more than one person in this room that ever saw me drunk. Mrs. C's here, and she could see when I couldn't. But I suspect she's the only one here that ever saw me drunk. So you all don't know whether I'm a drunk or not. You just got to take my word for it, or think I'm a liar. But if you should, before I get through, decide that I am a drunk, of the tongue-chewing, babbling, idiot variety, then you've got to also decide that something's happened to me. Because tonight I'm not drunk. And tonight I am not miserable. Now, I was not a happy-go-lucky drunk. I was a unhappy-go-to-hell drunk. That's what I was. And I'm not miserable tonight. I'm at peace with me and with you and with my very own God. So you've got to decide something happened to me. Because that isn't normal for a tongue-chewing, babbling, idiot drunk. But even that wouldn't make it include the decision that if something happened to me, it could happen to you. Because you could say to yourself, that doesn't mean that it's going to happen to me, because I'm different. I'm different. Well, every one of us that come here are different when we get here. We have to stick around a little while to find out we're as like as black-eyed peas. So, I would ask you just a couple of questions. If you're an alcoholic, do you suppose that it was because you shook differently than I did that you think you're different? Do you think you had a little movement all your own? I doubt it. I doubt it. Because I shook all the way up to G-sharp minor or something. And when I came here, I wasn't shaking like this. The meat was jumping up and down on my bones. So I don't think you shook any different than I did. Do you think that the neighbors could have figured out whether it was you or I working out a set of dry heaves? Oh, God! What do you think? Do you think the neighbors had known which one of us it was? I don't think so. Did your bed get any wetter than mine? Now, I realize I shouldn't say that in Laguna Beach. Because this is a very upstanding, fine... What was that I heard? Community. But you know, my bed got awful wet in Beverly Hills. And that's a pretty nice place, too. So I don't think so. If it happened to me, it can happen to you. Provided you do the things that I have done and that many people in this room have done ever since we got here. For instance, the first night I got here, I wasn't even looking for sobriety for myself. I had accepted the fact that everything dear to me in life was gone and should be gone, and that I wasn't entitled to have it back. I'd also accepted death because the next to the last time I went out, I fell over on my face and they had to get the oxygen squad to wake me up. And the young doctor that was with him told me after they had brought me around that to all intents and purposes I'd been dead. That they'd had a hell of a time bringing me to. And then he said to me, I don't think that anybody will ever bring you to again under these circumstances. And then he gave me the finest piece of counsel I've ever gotten in my entire lifetime. He looked me right in the eye and he says, if I were you, I wouldn't do that anymore. Now I want to pass that on to the dozen new people. If I were you, I wouldn't do that anymore. But I did it again. And the last time was worse than the next to the last time. So I'd also accepted death. I knew I was going to die. But I didn't want to die with a record. I had to be sober today so I could rub out as much of the record as I could before I kicked off. I didn't want Mrs. C and the kids to remember me as nothing but a tongue-chewing, babbling idiot drunk. Now I want to say one more thing before I take off. One of my sons there. Many, many of those who are in the room, perhaps, are either husbands or wives or mothers or fathers of alcoholics. And you probably felt the same as my wife did. I suppose she told me 500 times, Chuck, if you loved us, you wouldn't do these things. If you loved us, you wouldn't do these things. Everybody does that, you know. Because they can't believe that anybody could love them and act like we act. And it's impossible to tell them. It's impossible. I couldn't tell her, it's because I love you that I do these things. How could I tell her that? She wouldn't have believed it anyway, but I couldn't even tell her. Because, you see, I knew I was crucifying her and the kids. And I couldn't do anything about it. I couldn't do anything about it. And I knew I was going to do it again. Because I tried everything on the face of the earth to keep from it. And I couldn't do it. So I never got to the point when I didn't like, when I didn't love my wife and my kids. And when I came to after my last drink, it was because I didn't want them to remember me as nothing but a tongue-chewing, babbling idiot, because I loved him. That I wanted to be sober till I died, which was imminent. And I came here to find out how to do that. One day at a time, from the very beginning. And here's what I heard the first night. If you're an alcoholic, one drink's too many, and 1,000 aren't enough. That's what you told me. Now, I'd never heard that. I'd been drinking 25 years. Nobody had ever said that to me. And I had never said it to myself. Because I was periodic the last 10 years, and periodics don't get drunk in a hurry. It had never occurred to a periodic. There was the first drink. I tried for 10 years to cut it off before the trouble started. I thought it was the last gallon, not the first drink. So, this came as something new. And I played with it a while. And I could see that it was just a question of time. From the time I took the first slug after a dry spell, that I was flat on my back drinking the clock around again. And I bought that one. It's the first drink. It's the first drink that I must not take. And I've still got it. The second thing they told me is today's the day we don't drink. Now that's a left-handed attempt to keep us coming back. If they'd have told me I had to be sober 30 years, I'd have dropped dead. If they'd have said 30 days, I'd have dropped dead. But they said today's the day we don't drink. And they said if a day's too long, how about an hour? Can you live an hour without drinking? Make that the length of your life. Live an hour and don't drink, and then do it again. But, said they, don't drink today. And I played with that a while and bought it. And it's become the second greatest lesson I've ever learned in my entire lifetime. The second greatest lesson I've ever learned. And my plea tonight would be this. For those of you who haven't done so yet, if it's humanly possible, leave every yesterday and every tomorrow in this room when you go home tonight. Leave them all right here. And you'll leave 95% of your trouble right here in this room. 95% of our trouble, yesterday's burdens and tomorrow's fears. And if you leave them all here, you won't have them. You only have 5% of them to deal with. And that's a whole lot better than the whole bunch. So leave all your yesterdays and all your tomorrows here, because the combined intelligence of the human race can't do anything about yesterday or tomorrow. Yesterday is nothing in the world but guilt. Tomorrow is nothing in the world but fear. So leave them here. Today is my day. I have no past, I want no future. The next thing they told me was stay close to us. Get into as many meetings as you can, said they. Because there is more wisdom in this room about your problem and its answer than in any other room on the face of the earth, except another room just like this, where AA members are meeting. So stay close to us. Get into as many meetings as you can. And I played with that a while and bought it, and I've still got it. I have attended nearly 5 than 4 meetings a week for almost 31 years. And I have never attended one meeting too many. You might say, how do you know? Because I never had it so good. This is the only easy life I've ever known, the only good life that's ever been mine in my entire lifetime. And I'm not about to change a winning formula. I'll be coming to these meetings until you pat me in the face with a scoop. And I might say it's no chore. It's no chore. Because I happen to love these meetings, and I love it, the people that are here and are at all of our meetings. So it's no big deal. The next thing they told me was why I couldn't drink like other people. Now, in my opinion, this is the only intellectual knowledge you and I will ever need that we didn't have when we got here. Why can't I drink like other people? This used to just blow me out of my gourd. Because people were saying to me for 10 years, Chuck, you can't drink, you got to quit. And in 99% of the cases, it was obvious to me that they were my inferiors. I would say to myself, why in the hell can't I drink? He does, and he ain't got it. And my answer to me was, you can, and you got to prove it. And I was still trying to prove it 10 years after I'd lost. 10 years after I lost this battle, I was trying to prove that I could drink. I was saying to myself, 5 years after everybody quit listening to me,
I'll do it to the thing if it's the last thing I ever do. I just came that close to being the last thing I ever did. And nobody ever told me why I couldn't drink like other people until I got to my first meeting. And people just like you, drunks who were not drunk, told me the first night. Why can't I successfully drink liquor? Because I'm an alcoholic. What is an alcoholic? An alcoholic is a person who suffers with the disease of alcoholism. The disease of alcoholism. I had never heard those words until my first meeting. And yet I remained with you to learn that informed medical opinion. I said informed medical opinion. Classify alcoholism as the second worst killer in the country today. They used to stay in the top four. Now they say second, and when they get honest enough to put the cause of death on a death certificate, they'll see that it's number one and has been for years as a killer. It's second only to one of our social diseases as a cause for permanent insanity. And medically speaking, it's incurable. And that's what I got. I'm an alcoholic. It's a matter of life or death, and it's my life. So it's a pretty serious matter. Now, they also defined the disease for me the first night I was here. They said it's a disease of a twofold nature, an allergy of the body coupled with an obsession of the mind. An allergy of the body coupled with an obsession of the mind. The allergy of the body meaning simply this, that for some reason unknown to anybody, my body cannot successfully handle alcohol. I can't oxidize it, burn it up, and get rid of it. I take a slug of liquor, it goes into the bloodstream of the brain, and it triggers a physical demand that makes me keep on drinking until my cycle is run. Now, this is not true with 90% of those who drink liquor. And this is one of our biggest problems. We look around us and see people drinking as much as we do, and they're not in trouble. And we can't understand it. And this is it. And this is an awful good thing to know. 90% of those who drink liquor do not turn out to be alcoholics. Only 10% of us. And this is one of our biggest problems. Now, the learned tell me that anybody that messes with dope other than alcohol over a period of time becomes addicted. 100% of them. Now, if you and I could tell each other, look, if we keep on drinking, we're going to be alcoholics, maybe we'd listen. But that is not true. We can't say that. Because only 10% of us turn out to be alcoholics. And nobody knows what the physical deficiency is. They don't know what works too fast or too slow or don't work. They know it's that way, because they can test me and see. They could if they could catch me. But they're not going to test me. I tested me for 10 years. I don't need any more tests. But there's nothing to be done about the physical part of the disease. Once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. And the body gets less able to react normally to alcohol with the passage of time, even during long extended periods of total abstinence. I'm actually 30 years worse off so far as successfully drinking is concerned than I was when I got here. And I know it, and I don't need to take a drink to prove it. I've had to bury too many of my friends that thought otherwise. So, all we can do with the physical part of the disease is to accept the fact that that's the way it is with us. And then turn to the other half of the disease, the obsession to the mind. And that's what our program is all about. We just recognize the physical and leave it lay. And then turn to the other half, the obsession to the mind. And we have a program that is foolproof, provided we honestly apply it to ourselves. We have a formula that's foolproof. If we honestly apply it to ourselves, and we heard it read tonight. In my opinion, it's the finest formula that was ever conceived in the mind of man through the grace of God for people like us. Because not only is it possible for us to live without drinking, but the formula for sobriety and the formula for the good life and the formula for self-discovery are all the same. All of those things happen to those who honestly apply this program to themselves over a period of time. And it's not tough if you recognize before you start that you can't do it yourself. Our decision, if we be alcoholic, is not to stop drinking. That isn't our decision. Our decision is that we can't stop drinking, that we need help. And that's the reason the first condition for sobriety is the first line of the second paragraph of chapter 3, which says, we learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost self that we're alcoholic. This is the first step in recovery. Now that's the first line in the second paragraph, chapter 3. And our 12-step program is in chapter 5. Why is that clear back there in chapter 3? I think it's because if we be alcoholic, we're caught in a trap we cannot spring. We have to have help, and we can't get help until we recognize the need for it. We can't get help until we recognize the need for it. We're a peculiar breed of cats. We can't hear till we can hear, and we can't see till we can see. For instance, on that next to the last trip out for me, after that doctor had given me that fine piece of advice, if I were you, I wouldn't do that anymore. Maybe 24, maybe 36 hours after that, I was able to get out and get the old dirty bathrobe on and start walking off my drunk. And I'm walking up and down the living room floor, sweating, freezing, shaking, dying, and walking. Mrs. C. standing over the fireplace. And as I walked away from her, she said to me, Chuck, don't you think you might get a little help if you'd read the book Alcoholics Anonymous? And she might as well have hit me in the head with a ball bat. I turned on her like a lion. I says, you, my very own wife, suggesting that I read a book written by a bunch of drunks. I who have read all the good books with the good authors. And you, I said, you wound me deeply. Now, I'd just been dead 48 hours before. And she wounded me deeply just by suggesting that I read that book. And I polished her off completely by saying, and besides, I can write a better book than that myself. Now, the reason for telling that little story is that was just 90 days before I came crawling into this program. I had been drinking that flit for 25 years, 10 years in the hottest hell that I ever hoped to live in, and she wounded me deeply just by suggesting that I read the book. So we can't hear till we can hear, and we can't see till we can see. So we must recognize that we've lost the battle, that we need help, to accept ourselves exactly as we are, where we are tonight, is the opening for a victorious run. Because after we recognize that, we can get help. Because we can hear. The second condition also comes before step one. And it says, if you have decided you want what we have, and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. That means that sobriety must come first on our hit parade. I am one who believes that unless and or until sobriety comes first, we can't have it. And unless it remains first, we cannot keep it. So, we learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we're alcoholics. That's number one. Number two, sobriety must come first. And the reason that those two are where they are is because no alcoholic on the face of the earth is going to walk up to step one and take it if there's any way under heaven that he can duck it. Nobody. Because the first step in our program is a twofold admission of defeat. And no alcoholic is going to admit defeat if there's any way in the world to keep from it. I can tell you without fear of successful contradiction that had it been possible for me to remain in left field and survive, I'd still be there. But it wasn't, so I came to you. The step reads, we admitted that we're powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Now that's a twofold admission of defeat. Powerless over alcohol, physical. Unmanageable life, mental. I have lost the battle twice over. Now that's the reason those conditions come before step one. Because we have to be prepared a little bit for that step one. It's pretty tough. Twofold admission of defeat. The second one's worse than the first. Because it says, we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Which again is a second-hand admission that we're not his fruitcake. Now there's an implication in that step. Sane people don't need to be restored to sanity, do they? If you and I need to be restored to sanity, we must. And that's what the step says. We came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. We need to be restored to sanity, so we're nuts. That means that the first step says we've lost the battle of life, the second that we're insane. Now that's a pretty fast start for a drunk, isn't it? The third step's worse than both of them. Because it says we got to give up the keys. We got to get out of the driver's seat. We made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God, as we understood it. We got to get a new driver. Now, as serious as this thing is, it tickled the hell out of me. Because the only way anybody could ever get my keys was to wait till I passed out. There's somebody in the audience that could corroborate that. I could come out of a pub at 3 o'clock in the morning with my wife or yours. She'd say, honey, give me the seat. Give me the keys. I'll drive. He'd say, whose car? Whose car are you going to drive? This is my car. If you're going to get it. You might be there in daylight. You ain't gone no place, but you still got the keys. Step 3 says you got to give up the keys. We made a decision to turn our will and life over to the care of God. Now, in my own case, there was nothing else to do but dump me. Because I had been to human help. I had proven to myself that I was alcoholic and couldn't manage my own life. That's A. I had been to human help, the best. Medical, spiritual, and psychiatric. And there was no help for me. So I would change the B for myself. You don't need to. But I would change the B to no human power could have relieved my alcoholism. Because it had already been. And so having been to human help, I knew that there's no reason to keep messing with that. So dumping me was all right. To dump me totally and completely. Now, it's a fantastic thing, this. This is the greatest thing that could ever happen to anybody on the face of the earth, alcoholic or not alcoholic, even the Al-Anon-Anonas and the Hot Cha-Chas. It's the greatest thing that could happen to anybody. Is to dump themselves. We made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. Did it ever occur to you that if you make a decision to turn your will and your life over to the care of God and do it, that you're no longer your problem? You're his problem now. You have dumped yourself. Self-concern has no place in your life. Now, this is something to look at. Self-concern merely says, look, Dad, I don't believe you're quite as familiar with this problem as I am. I'm going to have to get you a little outside help. Maybe, I won't say that. We made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. My case again, nothing else to do. I had to turn my will and my life over to a jackass. If I could have gotten rid of me. I hated my guts. Totally and completely. So it's no big deal to dump me. Beautiful thing. In my own opinion, it's the tops of any experience you'll ever have in your life. It's the tops. You'll never have a better one or a bigger one. We enter a new dimension of life when we turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. Pretty soon we discover that we have an infinite father, an infinite child, and an infinite journey. That is fantastic. Everything opens up. all of life opens up. And it becomes a million times bigger than it ever was. When we get this done and keep doing it, we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. Now, the next two steps make the first three look like dominoes. The first three steps are decisions. There's no action. They're decisions. They all take place on the inside. The fourth step is the first action step. It says we made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. In Ireland, they call that an inventory. Inventory. They call it an inventory over in Ireland. Whether it's inventory or inventory, it's quite a thing. We made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. So we get a long pencil and a thick pad, and we start writing. But in my opinion, it isn't necessary for us to write every lie we ever told. Every time we turned left when we should have turned right. Every time we woke up in the wrong bed. Everything we ever stole. I don't think that's necessary. This is a moral inventory. And we're supposed to write it up to show us what has motivated our lives up until now. Motivation. That's what a moral inventory will show us. What has been the reason for our actions up until now? And of course, as the book tells us, 99% of it is self-will run riot. I want, I don't want, I like, I don't like, I yai. So, we see our motivation. And in seeing our motivation, we have written down enough to have a nice bunch of character defects exposed. You know? And the next step says we're supposed to share them. We admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Now, the first two conditions there are very simple. We can hide behind a curtain and admit to God and to ourselves. But that third section is pretty tough. Because somebody's going to be walking the streets knowing what's inside of me. We admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our own. And that other human being is the thing that separates the sheep from the goats. That's a dilly. The reason that other human being's in there is to surrender us at death. And we got to tell the very thing that we have sworn that nobody will ever find out. We got to spill it all. So it's very important that we do this with a great deal of care. If I were a Catholic, I'd pick out a Catholic priest who was also a recovering member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And they're not hard to find. Because they don't tell on us. If I were a Protestant, I would
picked me a Protestant minister. That is a recovering member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And they're not hard to find. And if I was neither one, I would pick out somebody that I had gotten well enough acquainted with in the program to believe that they wouldn't tell on me. Because this isn't something to spread all over town. You know? And so we share this whole deal with another human being. These two are action steps. And they're beautiful steps. They're terrific. As a matter of fact. And the next two, again, are decisions. After we've written this stuff down and shared it, we become willing to give it away, and we give it away. Now, I have been fortunate in that I have met alcoholics almost all over the globe. Many foreign countries, as well as all over this country in Canada. And I find them all over the country, all over the world, beating their brains out over their defects of character. Continuously pulling these chestnuts out of the fire and burning themselves up with them again. I can't live that kind of a life. I don't want to live that kind of a life. I took one fourth step and one fifth step. Period. Now, I have fortunately worked with wet drunks for 30 years. And I haven't found it necessary even to wonder about taking another inventory. Because in working with wet drunks, you're forever taking a fourth and fifth step. Forever. Because every time you sit it out with a wet one, something new comes out of you to share with him. You know? It's a fantastic thing. You can't get old in AA if you work with wet drunks. You're only as old as your last session with a wet one. Because everything is new every time you've had a session with a wet drunk. It's beautiful. So, we don't have to continuously go through those things. We become willing to give away this stuff. And we give it away. The two steps read, we were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. Now that don't tell me that I've got to do it myself. That tells me that I become willing to give it away and give it away. And this is so, so deeply impressed on me because I find people, I think I told you this once before. I was riding from Shreveport to Dallas in a carload of people, and they were all inventory people. They spent half their life writing, and half their money going to Houston to share this with somebody that was an expert. Who they paid for helping them with this fifth step. One gal was sitting there by me and she said she had taken 11 this year. And this was only November. And I said, what the hell are you trying to do? Kill yourself? What do you want to do that for? What are you living in that mess for the rest of your life? It was enough for me to live in that for 25 years.
I don't live in it anymore. And I'm not going to. You see, I don't have to. I know I told you this little thing once. I'm going to run out of time, so I've got to hurry. But I'm going to tell you again. 25 years ago, I was talking to a guy in Fresno after the meeting. We'd had a meeting, then we went out to this guy's house. He's a fine young man. Sort of like Keith, only he was sober. I think another 16 years, old Keith's going to get real sober tonight. That's a lot of applesauce, and you know it. I knew Keith couldn't get sober when he came here because he was too young. That I had to eat my own words. Because I didn't think anybody as young as he could surrender. But that monkey's never looked back since I met him. Terrific. This guy was young, had a nice wife and three or four kids. At 2 o'clock in the morning, we were standing at the kitchen sink, and he says to me, "Chuck, ever so often I have to get drunk." And I said, "That's interesting. Tell me about it." He says, "I get to thinking about what I did to my wife and my kids. And I can't stand it. I get hurt and so bad I have to get drunk." And I said, "Don't blame you. If I got to thinking about my wife and my kids and what I've done to them whilst drinking, I'd be drunk before I get to Bakersfield. Now you think there wouldn't be a store open at this time of the night, but there would be when I ran this car of mine through the front end of it. I don't think about what I did to my wife and my kids. My thinking today is how much can I add, if anything, to their lives. And that's what I'm trying to do, add a little to the life of those around me. And I don't have to get drunk, you see. I don't live in that stuff anymore. We were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character, humbly ask Him to remove our shortcomings. And then we come to the next two, which are 8 and 9. And the first 9 steps of our program are the uncovering steps. They're the getting rid of the wreckage of the past. Uncovering. These two are, we made a list of all persons we'd harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. We made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. These are, again, action steps into action. And they're two of the most immediately rewarding steps in the whole program. When we get this done, we feel like the weight of the world had been lifted right off of our shoulders. Terrific thing. And I got to share another thing that I expect I've shared with you before. And that's when the guy called me a few years back, maybe 10 years ago. He's from Whittier, and he called me on a Friday night. He says, "Chuck, I'm sitting here with my six gun in my lap, and I'm going to blow my brains out. But old Jim told me not to shoot until I talked to you." And he says, "Now, what do you got to say?" I said, "Well, you called me on a bad night." "I'm talking tonight, tomorrow night, and Sunday night. But if you want to talk to me, come down Monday. Monday's open. And if you don't, go ahead and blow your brains out." 7:30 Monday, the doorbell rang. And there was my man. And it's 1:30 in the morning. We were right where we are right now. We made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Made direct amends whenever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. And this guy was not only an alcoholic, he was a compulsive gambler.
I've heard that that happens once in a while. So, he had lost a lot of money that he didn't have. And I was sitting there talking to him, and I was saying to him this. Now look, you're going to have to go to these people, and you're going to have to tell them you're not the big shot you would have had them believe. That you're an alcoholic. That you found a way to go that might make it possible for you to live one day at a time from now on without drinking. And one of the conditions is that you make amends. And that's why you're there. You've come to make your amends. Now you tell these people, I admit the debt. I will pay you when I can, but I ain't got no money. And he says, Chuck, I can't do that. You'll kill me. I said, so what? You won't have suicide on your mind. And the old boy started laughing. And he's never quit. That's a good 10 years ago. He left that hill laughing. Till he got out of here and I could hear him laughing. And he left the hill a free man. And he did just exactly that. And nobody killed him. He's still walking the streets a free man and still laughing. It's a fantastic thing to get this thing done. You know? To clear away the wreckage of the past. Now that's 9 steps. And if we have done them honestly, we are now surrendered. If we came to the program not surrendered, the first 9 steps will surrender anybody that will honestly apply them to themselves. That's what they're there for, to squeeze us out of ourselves. Then we can look deep within ourselves and find us, which includes our relationship to each other and to God. Fantastic. It's an inside job, the whole thing. The reason that I'm not in sympathy with those who say that we have to learn how to love ourselves before we can love anybody else, that we're supposed to build self-confidence, get our self-confidence back, I think that's a lot of... Yes. That's what you thought. Really. Because in this self-discovery, there comes a feeling of dignity, of value, of worth, that is indescribably wonderful. It's a fantastic thing to discover that truly we are our Father's kids. It's just absolutely beyond words. And it carries with it the dignity, the value, the worth that makes it unnecessary for you to even consider it anymore. Beautiful. Now the 10th step keeps us level. This is not going back to the beginning. This is looking at today. How closely have I followed these principles today in all of my affairs? That's your 10th step. It's a daily look to keep us level. How closely have I practice these principles in all of my affairs today. And when we're wrong, promptly admit it, and so forth. Now we got 2 more. And the 2 more are where we come in really to the AA way of life. 11 and 12. It's a beautiful thing. We sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him. Praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry it out. Now, the as we understood Him does not mean that we're supposed to understand God. Thank God. It took everything I had to tie my shoes when I got here.
I was still falling on my face 3.5 years after my last drink. So thank God, it has no reference to understanding the intimate. It has reference only to the necessity of individual experience. My God, your God. God as I don't understand it, or do, it don't make any difference. We sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with our very own God. Praying only for knowledge of His will for us and try to carry it out. Now, I changed that for myself. I get up in the morning and I say, look, Dad, I'm reporting for duty. Now, I'm going to move it around. I'm going to do the best I can with what I got. And all I want out of you is a little guidance and direction, try to carry it out. Sure, thank you. And I go about my business. In total expectancy of guidance and direction. And I get it. And you might say again, how do you know? Simplest yardstick in the world. I never had it so good. I never had it so good. Now we got one more. And it's a lifetime course of action. A lifetime course of action. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these first 11 steps, we tried to carry this message to the alcoholic who still suffers and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. A lifetime course of action. Now there's an implication here too. And the implication is that we've taken the first 11 steps. You don't very often have a spiritual awakening as a result of 11 steps you took. Don't happen very often that way. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of the first 11 steps, we tried to carry this message to the alcoholic who still kept it. And to practice these principles in all of our affairs. Now, when we practice these principles in all of our affairs, everything becomes one. And there is nothing more or less important, and nothing more or less spiritual than another. If you're practicing the same principles in business, in church, in home, in AA, it's all one. So, everything's one, and it's living, it's being. So these steps put us back together again. We are made whole. And I'm convinced that nobody can honestly apply these without having these things happen to them. Now, there's one thing that goes with it that is absolutely fabulous, and that is our sharing and caring in Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share. We don't tell anybody anything. We won't even tell anybody that asks us. They say, do you think I'm an alcoholic? We say, I don't know. I am. I know that I'm an alcoholic. If you say you are, I believe you. But that's your decision. We share. Now that's communication. You see, we don't tell. We share. What a beautiful thing this is. And it does away with all the roadblocks. It does away even with language barriers and the loss of hearing and the loss of sight. how many people I have known in this program that got sober and stayed sober when they couldn't understand the language at all, and when they couldn't hear nothing, and when they couldn't see nothing. Sober by the spirit of Alcoholics Anonymous, the thing that allows us to share one with another in love. The thing that made old Al get up here and bawl and sit out, you know. Isn't that beautiful? Never forget my first birthday. I got up at the Beverly Hills Group for my first birthday, and there was a cake that had my name on it. And I took one look at it and started bellering and ran out of the place. You know something? Those bastards out there still say it's the best song I ever made. Isn't that awful? After 30 years, they're throwing that up to me. So, I'm so grateful I can't see. It's all I can do is keep from busting right out and bawling right now. Because this is not my doing. I take credit for the first 43 years. I failed at every department in life. At 43, I was a failure as a husband, a father, a businessman, a man, and a drunkard. And for that, I take credit. For nothing that's happened in the last 31 years do I take credit. Nothing. Not even for coming here. And my credit and my gratitude goes like this. It is first to you. My first gratitude is to you, the members of Alcoholics Anonymous, because it was you guys that took me on your laps and rocked me to sleep the first night I got here. It wasn't the program. It wasn't the book. It was you. He said to me, "Mister, were you looking for somebody?" And I said, "No, sir." He said, "What were you looking for then?" I said, "If it would interest you, sir, I was looking for sobriety." And you lit up like a bunch of Christmas trees and took me on your lap and rocked me to sleep. So my gratitude starts with you. It then goes to the program. And then it goes to God. But that ain't bad, I think, because we come to see that God is you, and God is the program, and God is me. God bless you. Thank you very much.